go into the ministry, or if you go into, or if you become a nurse, you've got to be able to take evidence, collect it, make a cohesive story out of it to change people's lives.
Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing program to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
We welcome today Dr. Colin Garbarino, Associate Professor of History, Director of Graduate Programs and Humanities at Houston Baptist University. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And we just talking that you're from Louisiana.
That's right. That's right. I sometimes offends these Texans when I say it's the best state in the union.
Well, it's got some good food.
That's right. That's one of the most important things.
You eat crawfish?
Oh, of course I do. Yes, I do.
You get all that Cajun food.
That's right. I'll have crawfish in a couple of weeks when I go visit my parents for
Easter.
You
don't look like you eat anything. You're slim.
I live in Texas now. That's the problem.
You teach Western civilization surveys and upper level classes on ancient and medieval history. You are the 2015 recipient of the Opal Goolsbee Outstanding Teacher Award at HBU. That must mean that you are one effective, popular guy.
I had some very generous students in 2015. That's all I can say. That was a good group of students who I was teaching that year. And I especially enjoy the freshman Western Civ sections. I remember whenever I was a freshman coming onto a college campus, didn't know my right hand from my left.
Yeah,
and you know, I was blessed to have some professors who sort of showed me the ropes, and I really take that as a burden and a responsibility to, you know, kind of pass that on to the next generation. So I, you know, some professors just want to deal with the graduate students and the upper level students. I really enjoy the freshmen. It's a good opportunity to sort of get in at the first stages, set them up for success. So,
well, you know, those freshmen represent incredible potential to influence. And if we take it seriously, as you have, you certainly get the response. Tell us about the Associate Professor of History program at HBU, and then I want to talk about the graduate programs in humanities.
Yeah, the history program, it's one of our core programs in humanities. I'm a history professor, so of course I think the study of history is incredibly important. But one of the things I tell my freshmen when they come into Western Civ, because they don't necessarily want to take a history course. You know, mm-hmm. they probably had a coach teach them history in high school, and they didn't necessarily know what they were there for. It's just a lot of dates, dusty old books, and things like that. And when they get into my class, I try to give them a vision for, whether they may end up majoring in history or not, I try to give them a vision for the fact that they can't help but be historians themselves. Because history is simply about taking evidence, and you take it and you shape it into a story that other people can understand. And in a history class, we take evidence about what was going on in the past, and then we take it, we ask some questions about it, we try to come up with an answer, and then that answer is in the form of a story, right? And I tell them, I said, you're doing that every day of your life. Mm-hmm. I said, on your first day of school, your mother calls you, says, how did it go? Well, what do? You tell her a story. She asks you a question, the first part of history, you need to ask a question, and then you give her the answer, which is the actual doing of the history itself, and you put it in a little story. You've got your evidence, your syllabus, your professor is a little bit, you know, crazy, gonna expect you to read too much, whatever. And so I tell them, this is incredibly useful stuff, because we're just helping you refine what you do on a daily basis anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not something that's out there. Not going to be useful for your life. You know, this is something that's incredibly pertinent to your day-to-day affairs, no matter if you major in history, you go into the ministry, or if you go into, or if you become a nurse, you've got to be able to take evidence, collect it, make a cohesive story out of it to change people's lives, you know? So that's one reason why I really like teaching history, because I feel like it's the skills that you learn, you know, maybe not all the dates and, you know, kings and all that kind of stuff. That might not be totally relevant to everybody, but the skills that you learn while you do that are transferable through any discipline.
Now, how did you get interested in that young man from Louisiana in history?
Well, I was the week before school started, my freshman year, I was looking through a catalog, and I actually planned to major in English. And I was flipping through the course catalog at the university, and I saw these classes and these history classes, and I thought, those sound kind of interesting. I don't really know much about, you know, the Middle Ages. I don't know much about this time period. That could be kind of fun. And so I just sort of on the fly switched over to history, and I found it very rewarding because it really is about story, and it's about the story of us. It's about the story of where we came from, and that really resonated with me. And I think if done right, it resonates with most people because everybody likes a good story, you know.
Yeah. Where'd you do your work at academic?
I did my undergraduate degree at Louisiana Tech University, and then after that, I actually spent some time overseas doing a little bit of mission work, and then when I came back, I did a seminary degree at Southern Seminary in Louisville, and spent 4 years there, and then after that is when I went to graduate school in history and got the PhD from Louisiana State University.
Mm.
So kind of left Louisiana, came back to Louisiana, and now we're here in Texas.
So you've got some religious history too, don't you?
Yeah, so when I went to the seminary, I discovered that, you know, I'm Baptist, and I'm very proud of my Baptist heritage. One thing I discovered, however, was that we Baptists don't necessarily do much early church history as Baptists. We tend to focus on more recent history of the church. And so one of the reasons I went to graduate school and got my PhD was that I wanted to investigate the early church history and have a contribution from a Baptist perspective on that time period. So looking at church fathers like guys like Augustine and Ambrose and John Chrysostom, these guys. And that was what really got me sort of back on the academic track, was this realization that, hey, there's a hole here. There's a need for Baptists to engage in this kind of work. So,
well, that's interesting that you bring up history, because I've been interested in the religious history of America. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to like Thomas Kidd up at Baylor and
oh yeah, mm-hmm.
John Fea at Messiah College and some of these folks that you probably know, and their take on the founding of America. And was it a spiritual mission? I mean, how Christian were the forefathers?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested in your opinion of that.
Well, that's kind of a loaded question. But
well, I wanted to give you a loaded question. Do you think you're going to get in and out of here without one?
I think I'm not an American historian by training, although we all sort of pick up a little bit along the way. But I do think that there's a certain complication to that question, because mm-hmm. some of our founding fathers were very religious men, and others of our founding fathers didn't have much. They appreciated the cultural aspects of Christianity and the law and order that it brought, but they didn't necessarily have much time for Jesus or the Holy Spirit.
Right.
And so guys like Tom Kidd and John Fea, my own ideas about America's founding are very much sort of consistent with theirs. I think Tom Kidd is just especially just not just brilliant scholar, but also just he works really hard. I mean, he gets a lot of stuff out there.
He does.
So I appreciate the work those men have done, and I think it's important when you look at America's founding to realize there are no easy answers. People are complicated, situations are complicated, and that ought to cause us to pause and think about our own situation, because we're in a situation now where sometimes politicians come up and they tell you there's an easy answer, and there's not an easy answer necessarily. We've got a very divided country right now, and those divisions aren't just going to go away because we elect one person or this other person into office. These things have deep spiritual roots that you have to sort of peek behind the curtain and see what's actually manifesting these things.
It was interesting with talking to both of those men, and some of it was a repudiation of this kind of David Barton version mm-hmm. of American history. Mm-hmm. That just some of the
I think that's one of the versions that I think provides. There's some helpful stuff there, but some of the answers are too easy.
Right.
Too easy.
Yeah. And that speaks of the fact that it is important for an undergraduate as well as a graduate to know something about history. Yeah. I mean, we history repeats itself. And I'm sure you have a bunch of other little quips you could say in that regard. But what is it about history that young people, I mean, is your curriculum a part of the core for the undergraduate?
For the core curriculum at HBU, we have 6 hours of required history. 3 of those hours have to be Western Civilization I.
Right.
And the other 3 can be taken from either American history or the second half of Western Civilization. And when we looked at that, what we wanted students to understand more than anything else, we felt like part of the Western Civilization really embodied some of that 10 pillars ideal that Dr. Sloan has set out, where you get a lot of the big ideas, sort of the foundational knowledge that is important for not just the Christian life, but being human in general. Mm-hmm. We talk about where does ideas about how do we know what we know, when we talk about Plato. We talk about Athens and its democracy, when we talk about Rome and its republic and how it fell and how the empire fell and these kinds of things. We're talking about important political questions. So we look at Western Civ 1 as sort of laying a foundation for some of those ideas keep cropping up later and later and later in American history and 19th and 20th century European history as well. But we want to go back to the beginning in Western Civ 1 and make sure that the students are sort of exposed to these ideas at their very root. And of course, this is one of the things we cover in there is the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I mean, that's the cornerstone of history right there. We worship a God who is not just the author of history, but has made himself a part of history, right?
Yes, and indeed. And I've interviewed some of the leading mythicists of North America. And of course, there is hardly anyone in history, whether secular or sacred, that buys the mythicist argument. I mean, that Jesus never existed.
Right. Yeah, that's not supportable. It's just not supportable.
You might have preached that line a decade ago, but you can't really preach it now with extra biblical historical references to a first century man named Jesus. Again, proving how important it is. Now, you've also ventured out in some other areas. You were interviewed March 15th by Rusty Humphries on the radio program Trending Today USA, and you talked about themes present in Kong Skull Island?
Yeah, so
I didn't go see that yet with my wife.
Maybe you should check it out, but it's cautiously, because it's probably not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but if you like action movies with big gorillas, then you'll enjoy it. I've been doing some movie reviews lately, and part of my reasoning for that, actually, strangely enough, comes out of my historical background. I think that's partially what motivates it, because, as I said, when you're dealing with history, history is really about, it's about story. It's about telling.
Right.
It's about telling a story that is true and communicating it to the next generation. And movies, whether they're historical or not, whether they're fictional or aspiring to some level of reality, really they're telling stories as well. And so, I started watching movies more critically a number of years ago, and started thinking about the underlying themes and worldviews and things like that, and mm-hmm. started writing about it on the side, and a couple of people started listening. So
They did. I mean, Dr. Garbino has published 6 movie reviews with The Federalist this year.
Yeah,
so that's no understatement.
They're very it's very kind of them to be willing to run those reviews. But
okay, let's talk about what 6 did you pick?
Let's see. I see if I can rattle them off the top of my head. I saw a really bad movie with Jamie Foxx called Sleepless. I wouldn't recommend that to anyone.
Okay.
I saw Split, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, which it's a little bit scary, and so it's not going to be everybody's favorite, but it was actually pretty good. I saw what else did I write about? I wrote about Logan, the new Wolverine movie, mm-hmm. which has some issues, but it is probably, it's a good movie, but it's got some theological issues that probably need to be addressed in it. And we've got Kong Skull Island, and then, oh gosh, there was something else I saw that it must not. Oh, Lego Batman of all things. Yeah, my son dragged me to that one, and I wrote a movie review of it just to justify the time out with my son. So we had a good time.
They also tell me that earlier this year you wrote a book review for the Gospel Coalition on Larry Hurtado's recent book Destroyer of the Gods, a book which looks at Christian distinctiveness in the Roman world.
So I'm not just doing movie reviews. I'm actually pretending to be a scholar sometimes.
Well, to write for Larry, he's a major scholar, and to write about
that's an excellent book, and there have been a number of people who have I can't remember who it was, but there were a few people at the end of last year who actually put that book on their list of must reads for the coming year, because it's just a very helpful book about what made Christianity different in a Roman world. And one of the things that book draws out is the fact that in the post-Christian world we live in America,
right,
even the atheists think like Christians do.
Sure.
Right? The atheists only disbelieve in one God, right? The atheists think that religion is a private matter of the heart, whereas before Christianity showed up and told us that every man was accountable in his heart, nobody talked like that. Religion was a public matter that we all went to the city center and sacrificed together.
Right.
So so the book is very helpful in showing the roots of these ideas that even Buddhists in America talk like Christians now.
Right.
Because of the way they talk about their religion. So it's just a very helpful book, but.
And the incidentally, the Museum of the Bible that's opening in Washington, D.C., I was there recently, and they are going to have quite an opening in November of 2017. But one of the areas in it is a seat you get in, and it's a ride. It doesn't move, but it moves you mm-hmm. like you're in a flying machine. And it flies you all over, and I think Spielberg's company or one of the major companies is working with them. It flies you all over Washington to every biblical inscription on every building.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And explains the history of that inscription. And of course, you know, there's hardly any buildings without biblical references.
That's right. Yeah. And that's the story of Jesus is just permeates every aspect of our culture. And if I can just go back to movies one
sure.
minute, one of the reasons why I started, probably the reason I started watching movies with a critical eye was because a number of years ago, I was watching, I don't know if you've seen it, but Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Dollars.
Mm-hmm, sure.
At one point in this
I watched all Clint Eastwood's movies.
As everybody should. But
you kind of look like Clint Eastwood.
I look like an old Clint Eastwood these days. But there's this one point in the movie where Clint Eastwood is getting roughed up by some guys, and he gets his hand stomped on, and then they kick him in his side, and then they stretch him out on a table. And I'm watching that movie, and I'm like, This is the movie maker is showing me through visual images that this is the man who's going to save the town because he has been pierced in his hand and his side, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm paying attention to this movie, and I'm realizing the greatest story ever told is the story of Jesus Christ. And if you retell it in a movie, it resonates with people, even if they don't know that's what you're doing. And so I started watching these other movies, and every now and then I'm like, well, I'll be there. It is again.
Mm-hmm.
You start paying attention, and this idea of sacrifice on behalf of others, sometimes others who don't really even like you very much, right? It's just pervasive in our films. And so I started looking for that kind of, even in filmmakers who were not Christians, you still see that Christian worldview, the echoes of it in the movie. And then when you don't see it there, when you see some other kind of worldview at play, that's whenever it's, you know, really the red flags are start waving and the alarms go off, because you realize this is an agenda film. And one of the most famous agenda films is probably The Truman Show.
Sure.
Where the guy decides he's going, you know, basically the true man, who is kind of like this Adam figure, breaks out of his Garden of Eden, and he's the hero for doing it, right?
Right.
And the guy who's sort of taking care of him is called Christoph. He's like, he's a Christ figure, but in the movie, you know, we thumb our nose at him and we, you know, and we go get on with our lives. And that's that movie was written with an atheistic idea in mind, not just a sort of godless worldview, but a specifically we are going to try to denigrate the worldview of the man who made Fistful of Dollars, right?
Right.
And so that's one reason why I started writing these movie reviews, because as you said, these biblical passages are just all throughout our entire culture. They're in our movies too. Most people don't catch them because we're just there to eat the popcorn, right?
Right.
And so I've enjoyed with my students and some writing for some websites and things like that, kind of trying to draw out some of these deeper themes to ask people to question, like, you know, why do these things show up like these things? So in my, you know, my small way, I'm trying to highlight, just like you said, that the Bible Museum's doing, I'm trying to highlight that there's, you know, that there are elements of grace out there, even in the most surprising places of all things.
I couldn't agree more. Well, we've been listening to the 2015 Opal Goolsbee Outstanding Teacher Award, Dr. Colin Garbarino, Associate Professor of History, Director of Graduate Programs in Humanities at the Houston Baptist University. Man, it's been great to have you on Think About It.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
And tell us after you get another half dozen movies done and come on back and let's talk about them, okay?
Well, we'll see if I have time. So.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
At HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.